Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into the podcast, please, if you want, you don't have to, get involved in my Discord channel. The link is in the description. We talk about all things podcast, music. I give away a bunch of free shit on there as well. You also get early merch drops if you wish to have them. Secondly, if you do listen to this podcast, thank you very much. If you do listen and you aren't subscribed, please subscribe. It means the show can just keep going. And I can get bigger guests and we can make the experience better for everybody on here as well. So thank you if you do subscribe. If you don't subscribe, thank you for listening, but please subscribe. It means the absolute world to me. That's the only thing I'll ask you to ever do. Thank you very much. So, podcast time. This is a really good one for me. I know I say that about all of them. Dot Major is a member from London Grammar. London Grammar, if any of you know who I am, is probably one of my favorite bands. And during COVID, Dot and I started speaking on socials. And he is like transitioning, not away from the band, he's still doing the band stuff, but he's also transitioning into like the electronic DJ world. And his music that he's making is unbelievable. I was lucky enough to spend a couple of days in the studio writing some records together. And yeah, just his process of how he makes music is special. And the music that he makes is special. He's an extremely talented musician. So I thought I'd get him on the podcast and kind of get him to talk about why the transition, why he wants to also add the DJ world into his life. We skim across some of the band stuff and how the band started, and what they got planned for the rest of the year. I love this conversation. It was really good. So, without further ado, Dot Major. Mr. Dot Major, what is cooking, sir?
How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm really good, man. How about you?
Not too bad. Just deep in the studio world at the moment.
Yeah, how's that all going?
Good. Yeah, it's been good. It's been really nice. This year has just been pretty much studio all the time, so love it.
Yeah, you've been sending me records recently, just like nailing them out.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's quite kind of unlike me, I think. I've had an extended period of that's been the focus. So it's quite a pleasurable world to be in. It gives you a bit of routine and just kind of get up, go gym, go to the studio. That's life.
It's kind of like a freeing situation to be in, right? Where your whole focus is just to make anything.
Exactly. And you're not too worried about what it is. It just feels like an accomplishment anytime you pop something out.
Yeah, definitely. How does one get to that period in their artist career?
I suppose there's a lot of different avenues. I mean, for me, obviously, it's been being in the band with Dan and Hannah. It's like we have a natural way of career, which is we tend to be, we have periods of being in the studio, and we have periods of being on the road. A lot of the people I've been working with recently, whether it be like writers or producers or artists, they're kind of, some of them, obviously their entire world is just going to studio and working.
Yeah.
And actually I've always felt historically like sometimes when you've been spent enough time doing that, I mean, you'll know this, like you've just been spending all your time in the studio. It's like, you feel this urge to be in the other world, which is like you're traveling. Yeah. And because there's a freedom to the travel, which is, especially if you're a self-employed person, which essentially a lot of musicians are, it's like if you're sitting just kind of bumming around not doing anything, then you feel like you're wasting your time, and yeah, then that makes you feel really anxious. Whereas when you're touring, you're essentially working for a business, which is, in my case, it'd be London Grammar. And it's like, I just get told, you go at 10 o'clock, you've got to be in the lobby of the hotel, and then at 9 o'clock you've been on stage, and 2 o'clock you're on stage sound check or whatever it is. And anything you do in between that can be, it just feels like you're not wasting your time, even if you're just sort of lying in your hotel bed watching YouTube.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting, isn't it? Because I think the whole touring model, like making music is the reason why we tour, right? Like you have to have the product to then go and tour. However, like in a sense, in my world, not necessarily in your world in the band, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong, but like the whole kind of financial side of things when it comes to making music is very different. So like for me, in like in a DJ sense, the music, unless you have like a massive hit record, like it doesn't, you're kind of making music for free to then go and tour, is almost like your business card, right? Whereas I hear what you're saying with like the band and things like that, but is there a sense where on that like work thing, that when you're in the studio it is work, and it does feel like work to a certain extent, or does it ever not get to that point?
I don't think so. I don't really think, I've never really felt like being in the studio is work. I mean, there's lots of different elements, obviously, of being in the studio that people wouldn't really probably think about. Like sometimes you're just spending a whole day bouncing stems. So it's like, cause it's a center, a mix engineer, yeah, and then they're using a different program than you, and they want it in a different file format than you. And then that can feel like work because it's quite long, obviously. Yeah. But when you're making music, I honestly never really feel like it's work. I mean, certainly I've had periods in my life where it's felt, you feel more excited or less excited to go.
Yeah.
But normally once you get there, it's good. You know, it's a great place to be.
Do you ever get nervous when you go in?
Yeah. I've had that quite a lot recently, because just sometimes it's like working with different people. There's always, I think everyone gets it, to be fair, but you might be working with someone and you just think like, what if they just tell everyone that I suck? And and then it's like, everyone will know. Everyone will be like, oh God, that guy sucks, and he's been here for a while. But yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think everyone has that fear.
Yeah, I get it all the time. Every time I'm going into a session with pretty much anyone, I'm like, what am I even bringing into this session?
Like, what can I even do? I'm exactly. Just like, I can't actually do anything. I'm like, sometimes I'm just like, I can't play the piano. I can't write. I can't do anything.
The difference is you can actually play the piano. I can't.
But honestly, sometimes it's like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I can, sometimes I feel like I can't.
Yeah.
I think it's a case of you get so bored by your own limitations and your own voice. And that's ultimately the entire purpose of collaboration is to use two different perspectives to create a third perspective, which is in itself completely unique to the other two, or whatever, however many people are in the room. The boredom of your own way of working and your own musicality is really real. So that's what's difficult. Because I can't sit, sometimes I'll sit at the piano and just be like, stop playing. It's so boring. And then, but then you go over to someone else and they're like, oh, wow, that's really great. Like, you know, I want to record that or whatever.
Yeah, it's like stop playing the same chords. Like, yeah, we all have those go-tos. Like, for me, like, for a very long and still to a certain extent, when I'm writing club records, it's like, okay, let me go find a gospel sample. Let me go find, like, a Detroit stab. Let me go find the same, like, snare sound or whatever that is. And I think you're 100% right. It can get very tedious when you're by yourself. And even if you're trying to write something new or different, it's still so easy to just go back to what you know. It's like that kind of muscle memory.
But that's the thing, you forget, like, so we obviously were working together recently, and it's like, for a lot of people going into studio review, they're excited by what you do. Like, I'm a fan of yours, and so when we're working together, I'm excited for you to work in that way with me, if you get what I mean, and probably vice versa. But it's so sometimes I think, like, that's the point of collaboration, is people come into the room and they're like, I really want to get that thing that, like, Will can do.
It's just like having hype men just in your corner all the time.
It's just work with people that think you suck and do not want to go in the studio with you. Which, like, pretty sure that must happen sometimes.
Is that what it's like working in the band, though? Because I think there's three extremely talented people doing three different roles in the band, right? So is it a constant case of having two hype men around you all the time, just like pushing things for you?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's been like varying periods of like us as a band, and I think fundamentally it's just like the thing that you have to hold above anything else. It's like, having worked with those two guys all those years, I just have a huge amount of respect and admiration for their talents individually.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, like, when we're together, ultimately it's just, there is just this thing that happens, because we are very different musicians and we're very different people in a lot of ways. So it's like, but that's the point. It's like, if we were a band of three people that were the same, then I don't think we'd ever kind of have made the music that we've made.
Totally agree. And I think the dynamics, the fact that you're all very different creates the music that has such longevity over the years. And I think you can listen back to that first album and still feels brand new, and it still feels amazing when you listen to it from start to finish. How many are you 10 years into the band or 12 years into the band?
Yeah, I mean, so the first album came out 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was 2013. So we did a 10-year anniversary vinyl this year, which is crazy.
It's mad. For me, like, that first album was like a really interesting period of my life of like discovering new music. And for Drive, the film, was like one of my, it is my favorite film. It's like, I've got the poster, and it's literally like my favorite film. And obviously Kavinsky and the soundtrack was just like an iconic soundtrack for me. Then I heard one of your, what was your first single?
Oh, Hey Now was the first song we released,
I think I heard that on Zane Lowe.
Yeah.
And then I heard Night Call, and I was like, I'm in, I'm sold on this band. But I guess the question for me is like, how do you, 10 years on, how do you guys still create music that still sounds like London Grammar, but is still fresh every time?
That's a good question. I mean, so we've got new music and new album coming soon, and we're all really, really excited by it. And it's a good question about how you achieve that. I think we work in lots of different ways, and it enables us to keep things feeling fresh and different. Like we work in like twos as well as threes, and ones, twos, threes. So it's like, it's kind of, it's like a key padlock. Like, yeah. It's remarkable how many different combinations you can get from just three numbers. But it's testament to like what we've sort of achieved, to think that like what we're doing now, I find so exciting. And we're also, the thing is, you have to remember that in any case of any musicality, it's like life obviously changes you also as a person individually. So that's a compounding effect, that even if you are a solo artist, then after 10 years, you're going to be making different music than you were 10 years ago. So then you have to combine all three of us into that factor. Like, we're different people, we have different lives, you know, it's just,
I think 10 years, especially at our age, like, you change massively. So, because you go from your 20s into your 30s, which is like a huge kind of pivotal moment for anyone, yeah, for anyone in life. And then kids become involved and people, yeah, get married and all of that. And I think that's the thing that is amazing, what you guys have done as a band, is just like remain consistent.
But I think that's something that we have had to fight for over the years. And, you know, we've had to learn, like, I know I personally had to learn, like, just what it means to really respect the other people that you're sharing something like that with.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, like, when you're younger, I mean, certainly, like, as a young, when I imagine myself in sort of 8-9 years ago, my youth, when there was all the pressures around us and we're touring and stuff, I think, like, I can look back at decisions I made then with regard to the other two and think, like, I would do things differently now, because it's, but I think over the years, like, there's difficult conversations we've had to have around things like that. But, like, now where we're at is just, there's a freedom to it. And I think we fought really hard to just achieve the freedom that we have now. And actually, like, being in the studio now is really liberating. I mean, we have, for the first time, really stupid things, like, for the first time ever, we have our own space. We've got our own studio in which you've been to, which is, yeah, just like so amazing. And for years we'd come out of like long period of touring, and then we'd go into some really big commercial studio, and we'd just have like, we'd be sending parts to someone who's like on Pro Tools. And it was just like that process is actually quite difficult. Whereas I think we really we've always produced with, you know, and had other producers and stuff, but like now we're just, it's like more than ever, we have like more control than we've ever had. And we just have our own space. And it's just kind of, we invite people into the universe as and when we feel it's appropriate, yeah, rather than feeling like we have to go to other people all the time to specifically achieve that thing.
Mm. That must be quite a freeing situation to be in, though, where it's just all based on you guys control everything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I guess that also comes from 10 years of doing it, right? Of just being able to know exactly who you are and what you want and what you want to achieve in the music world and life outside of it. Because being a touring artist does completely change your life, of how you socialize, how your friends are, how your family is. Like, it's very different to like the normal day job.
Yeah. Actually, and that's something, like, from a personal perspective, like, I lost a lot of time with friends, family in my 20s. I mean, we toured heavily, like, for a fair few years. I mean, we don't really tour anything like that now. That's something that I just think is mad. Like, when I went to see Lauren Mabry on Monday, Akoka, and, like, amazing show. And it's just crazy to think she's just come off the back of all that touring with Churches,
yeah,
and then in this space, you know, I'm sure they're going to be doing a bunch more touring, like, judging by the history. And then she's like taking this break, but she's just got another record, she's doing all this touring. Hustler, just insane. Yeah,
just love the tour.
Yeah, mad.
No, but it goes back to what you were saying, right, about being the artist and the tour, it feels like the work, and in a positive way. It can have a negative swing, but I think, especially for me, is like, if I'm not touring, I feel like I'm being a right lazy fuck. I could be being super productive either in the studio or spending time with the family or doing stuff on the label or recording podcasts. I can be super productive in that sense. But if I'm not touring on weekends and I'm like sat at home on a Saturday night, just like thinking, I'm like, Will, you're being lazy. Like, why aren't you touring? Or is your career going down the pan because you haven't been booked for this Saturday night?
Yeah. I mean, that, and also the other thing is with, for you, it's like, if as an electronic musician, the other context is that if you're touring all the time, you've always got that pressure that you're, the music you're making is contextually fitted for a club. So that's like, that's another pressure, because it's like, I mean, we've discussed this, but like, the, you know, a lot of the music you're making now, it's like, how do you break out of that kind of cycle of like, you're touring and then you need music for the touring, and the music for your touring has to be something that works in a context at like 3 a.m. in a club.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult. And then you're like, you're spending a week essentially listening to club music, which is mental. I mean, I've been listening to so much club music recently, and it's kind of like, people, I'm just playing, people like playing me stuff, and I'm looking through stuff and listening to, I'm just like, it's all just like really hard. Cause I'm just in that world, which has been amazing. Like, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. I want to get into that. Cause obviously like, you've decided that you want to kind of go into the more electronic club world and start DJing and touring that way as well. Like, what was the process of, like, I know we've spoke about it personally, but like, I guess for people to kind of know, but like, where did that kind of come from? Cause with the band, you've always had an electronic aspect. For me as a fan of the band, it's always been like, there's always been a level of electronic side of things.
Yeah. I think that's always been there, and it's always been a big part of our identity, you know, musically, and my identity musically. And I think there's been a lot of moments where, I mean, naturally, like, because I, for some reason, during our first album, we really got this association between us and electronic music.
Yeah.
Which I think over the period of our time together so far has sort of been through peaks and troughs as to how much in that world we considered. I think in the first album, it really felt like we were almost like an electronic artist in terms of just the way it was, the promotional aspect of it, and the way that we were kind of like associated with certain different artists. And I think as a result of that, I was doing mixes for radio. So, I mean, I remember on the first album, I did like a mix for us for Annie Nightingale, and then over the years, I've always done those, and I was doing a lot of remixes and stuff, but I never really like made the sort of full jump to just be like, what would this come as? What would it be called? Would it be me? And if it is me, you know, I've got other stuff where I'm like singing, and would that be like, you know, would that be that I'm then pigeonholed into the club world? And then there was really like a moment with my friend Sam, Ashley Lewis, who's actually staying with us at the moment, but we had a party here, and I was playing him this beat I'd made on this drum machine. I've got it here. It's like, this is like this kind of Swedish like drum machine, and I was playing him this beat, and I didn't even have the headphones. There's one headphone. It's like, I was just sort of jamming on it. And he was like, dude, this is amazing. He's like, you got to do this at Printworks at like 1 a.m. And I was just like, yeah, sorry. I thought we were just kind of drunk. And then the next day, my manager was asking me, why is Sam booking to play the show? And I was just like, I mean, I'll definitely do it. But I was out of my depth, like, in all honesty. I mean, that was, I hadn't DJed for, I was DJing quite on the first album, but like never really sort of figured out like when was releasing and doing like the parties that I wanted to do and stuff. And then, so I just said yes, obviously. And then it was between Jerry Reed and Too Many DJs, who are obviously two very like iconic kind of staples of British electronic music.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, how am I going to do this? Because I can't, I can obviously DJ technically, but I was like, I'm not going to DJ on their level and have like the sympathetic nature of their DJing from thousands and thousands of hours in the club. So I just decided to take two CDJs and a synth and this and that drum machine, and just like incorporated that slight element of my playing into it. And actually it was so amazing on stage. It was like, you know, it was 5,000 people, and it was amazing. It went so well. I mean, I prepped for it hard, obviously, but it was just, there was one point where I was just playing out on that drum machine, like the 5,000 people. And I was just, I played that beat out for like 15 minutes or something. And it was just, I just thought to myself in that moment, I was like, whatever else I'm doing, I was like, I have to make this a big part of it. Cause I just, I love I really enjoy that feeling of being on stage and DJing. And it's just something that it took that moment for me to really sort of make the commitment that, like, despite whatever else is happening, like, this is something that I love and I need to make it a big part of my life.
I love that.
That was kind of,
Because I think there's also a level of freeness to it as well, which kind of goes back to what we're talking about in the studio, is like, when it's just you, you don't have to think about anybody else. And and I think there's levels of, like, maybe, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like, touring as a band is like, do this, do that, do then. Like, you have to be here, you're touring here. Whereas, like, when you're DJing, you don't have to stick to a strict set list. You don't have to be strict on anything. You can literally just do what the fuck you want, realistically. Is there a level of that, that is it just a little bit more freeing?
I think what's quite interesting about like DJing versus a traditional show in general is, like, people have this context of, like, so from, and I imagine obviously my parents are just gonna, they're just like, they just hear like boom boom boom, and like, they're just like, it's just once the whole things one song, like, it's like 2 hours one song. But what's quite interesting is, like, for obviously when you're there's certain, I mean, I grew up in classical music as well, and like, there's a similarity between like conducting and orchestration and the giving and like the to and fro of time and electronic music, because really, like, especially when I have like a synth from these 2 years and that, you can, like you said, you can do whatever you want, and you're really responding massively to the crowd. Like, so if I'm doing something like more ambient and I'm like building, you can just feel the groundswell of people either saying like yes, or they're just like, nah, come on mate, like, move on. And that's quite, and then you're always on your toes, which is really fascinating. And whereas with, you know, a traditional gig, it's like you play a song, there's applause is essentially like something that we use as like it metrically defines like the moments in the shows. You play, there's applause, you speak, whatever. So like, I think there's something about DJing that's just, like you said, it is conversely to sort of, and maybe counterintuitively to the attitude towards the music from the outside, it is actually like incredibly freeing. And like, there is an incredible amount of freedom in it. And that's like the thing that is really always has, the allure of electronic music has always been like, that has also conflated with the kind of the cultural history behind it. Like, if you imagine like Trezor in Berlin, the first Trezor in the beginnings of like techno, it was like a cultural liberation where there was a freedom in the way that the people were and the way that what they were experiencing versus whatever perpetration they're experiencing outside of the club. And then that kind of came through in the music. And now that's why I love it. It's in the music still, I think now.
No, I totally agree. And I think also there is, although I think it's changed a lot over the years, especially over the last like 10 years massively with social media, phones, etc., etc. But I think that the role of a DJ and the role as a fan going to a club is that you're kind of open to what you're going to be in for. Obviously, I think if you're going to like a headline show, you kind of know roughly what you're going to get. Like, if somebody's going to see, I don't know, whoever, like, you know that you're probably going to hear a few records from that person nowadays. Where it never used to really be like that. It was more so about just like the experience.
Yeah.
But there's still that level of freedom of on both parties, whether you're the DJ or the fan, that you get to just go and let loose. Whereas I guess if you're going to a London Grammar show, like, if you don't hear all the biggest London Grammar records, like, they're going to be pissed.
Yeah, of course. But that's the thing, you know, there's such a magic in when that's the thing, the highs you experience in those moments, because those songs have affected people's lives in a way that's like, maybe a certain song is like someone has, they've lost, and it's like a friend of theirs, and it's just like the meaning behind that is like so extreme, and that it's just the feeling you get from shows. Obviously everyone knows the song is very, very different. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, going back to electronic music, it's like, again, with the idea of freedom, the culture, like, and a huge other draw for me was like the, I mean, back in the day when people were playing records, they used to, they put gaffer tape over there, over the actual records that people didn't know what they were.
Yeah.
And now I think with like the ease of twisting things into different things, that same culture exists with like bootleg culture, which I just find amazing. Like, so, you know, it's like, what is that record? Like, no one knows what it is. There's actually like my friend Alfie Artnett, who basically, he owns a place called Next Door Records in Shepherd's Bush, where I did my launch party, and he's an amazing musician as well. And he's got this, he's like, so, I mean, his knowledge of vinyl is like beyond compare, but he's got this one white label, which just cracks me. When he's talking to me about it, he's like, no one knows what it is. He's like, I don't know what it is. He's like, there's only two. And he's like, if you play it, it just goes off. And I'm like, surely it's like online somewhere. He's like, no. He's just like, it's not online. He's like, you couldn't put it online. It would be a disgrace. But it's just so funny that culture's still there.
I love that culture. It was.
I love that, it. That was so funny.
I don't know about you, but that was what I grew up on. Like going, for me, like as a young DJ when I was like 13, going to buy records in like the local record shop and like seeing that white label, like pile of white labels, and you just don't know what you're going to get. And there is a level of where that's gone away a little bit, but I think there's also a level of that where it's still there, and like how like DJs and producers can like throw their edits around and
exactly.
And like just that sharing culture of like people asking what this record is and no one knowing what it is, and it's never going to come out, which I like that concept. However,
and it's amazing that it lasts for so long. I mean, like, I remember during lockdown there was like Ross from Friends did like a stay at home and rave whatever like stream, and there was this tune that he played, like he still hasn't released it, and I still don't know what it is, and it's just like it's always niggling me in my mind. I'm like, eventually, like, I'm sure I'll hear it, and if I'd have heard it, I'd probably be bored of it by now. But like the fact that I still don't have it, it keeps me going back. So it's quite,
it's strange that we do that as electronic artists, that we create. Well, it's not strange. It makes sense. We create tools for our sets, so our sets are individual. But they're generally always the most wanted records. And they're the records that everybody wants, and it takes so long for them to even come out because you make them on like in like 30 minutes. Like one of my biggest records was literally that concept. Like Hallelujah was a bootleg. I literally got the Hallelujah sample. I put it over a record that I made, and it literally half an hour, you're done. But like there's something really like spit and sawdust about creating music that quickly and that, with zero thought of commerciality or what this could do on a streaming or just, you're just like, this is a tool for the club and I know it's going to work. And I think I've got one in the moment that's, it's doing exactly the same thing. It's like, I wrote it like in a hotel, and now everybody is asking for the record. And it's like, what do you think that is? Where like you could spend hours and hours on a single, on a record, and it release and it doesn't do that well and it doesn't really connect. However, you write a record in 30 minutes that's an edit, and it's the biggest thing since sliced bread.
Well, I mean, it's exactly the same with songs though. Like any songwriter would tell you that like the ones that come quickly are the ones that are the best quite often. It's just, I think maybe it's like you spend so much time trying to make something that it isn't, so it's like if you don't bother like kind of covering it up, it's just like it is what it is. And I mean, I have even there's certain mixed things, you know, like with bootlegs, like they'll just be like this hi-hat that's just obtusely loud or like whatever, and it just gets people excited because it's not mixed right, because they just hear it and they're like, they're like that hat is ridiculous. But it just kind of little moments like that, I think if the more you kind of like make something more pristine, and also you're going to be introducing other layers of it, and like there is obviously a basic fact of space, so that like in, you know, in club records, I mean, the ones that really slap generally don't have that much going on. So I think you tend to like over saturate stuff that you think is going to be like a single with more stuff. I always just think in the studio in general, it's like it's not about whether something is commercial or not. I think the big problem is like, because we've had this, it's like sometimes we've got something that we're like, it's really commercial and it's quite scary almost. But I don't think the fear should be over whether something is commercial, whether it's not commercial. I think it's more like you actually generally tend to get something that you like and then you try and make it commercial. But it's like things are just either commercial or they're not, in all honesty. They're not like, it's not, you can't just turn something that's a B-side into an A-side by mixing it really well or by speeding it up or by slapping a donk on it or whatever. It's just not, it's not, it's more in like the feeling and the flow of like the original melody, harmony, lyrics, beat, whatever it is.
No, I totally agree. How do you, so for me, when I'm like reading the crowd as a DJ, a huge part of me is like, when I get really hot in the club, I'm like, okay, this is the this is a good night. Like when everyone's it's like when everyone's starting to get sweaty, it's like, this is a good night. How do you do that with like a band? Like, how do you kind of read it where it's like, you know what you're going to play, but like, how does it get to that point where, oh, this is a really good night or this was a shit night? Cause you're going to have both, right?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm always like really, really, really hot on stage.
Yeah.
Especially like, because with the band, I play drums, and playing drums is just like going to the gym. So it's like you're sweating. It's like my brother's on tour at the moment, and he wears like full suits and stuff. And I'm just like, how do you do that? Like, I guess so hot. Like Dan and Hannah wear like jackets and stuff, whereas I'm just generally in like it's hard. Fashionable. I mean, you always wear a t-shirt as well. You know, it's like I can't wear more than a t-shirt, really. It's still a feeling, you know, you still get a feeling from the crowd. Because we have like in-ears and stuff, I normally have like ambient mics to make sure I can hear what the crowd is saying more. Whereas like, you know, for example with Hannah, I think she like, that's kind of is more like intimidating, I guess. It's just like you still just feel the energy. And I mean, there's an interesting one with DJing. Like, I did a party the other day, which was like, everyone was just slamming it like really fast and really loud. And then actually it's like, if you just turn it down and like turn the BPM way down as well, then it's like people just feel like they have space to dance. I don't know, sometimes it's a difference between what people, for different people. But I find like with people on dance floor, I mean, you know, like it's just there's so much stuff at the moment, it's just like so fast all the time. And I find like from a dance floor perspective, it's just like, it's actually knackering it being that fast all the time.
I think there comes a point when the crowd don't know that they want to slow down, but when they do, it's like a breath of fresh air. And don't get me wrong, I really respect what's going on with the whole speed up of everything. It's not for me personally, but like, I think it goes to show when I this weekend just gone, I played after somebody at a festival and they were playing 155 BPM. And then like I played after them, and I'd play like 128 to 130. Realistically, sometimes slower, but like you can just see the freeing of like how people dance, how people kind of respond on the dance floor. And I was listening to your stuff just before we got on, and there is like a level of like your
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The space in your music allows so much more kind of freedom on the dance floor. Is that like something you specifically want?
Well, I just think, to be honest, it's like I have always listened to obviously lots of different types of music.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I think we had this discussion the other day, but I think what's quite interesting is like, you know, like there are lots of labels that I've loved for a really long time, but I think that when a label gets really successful in electronic music, like I won't mention any in particular, but there's a lot of them where like suddenly kids that are like, oh, I like this particular record label, they're just basically making the same music of everything else in that label, and then the label doesn't want to sign anything that doesn't sound like that, and then it's essentially like the record label is an artist almost.
Totally.
I feel like with slower music, I mean, from a really basic perspective, it's like you just, especially if you're using like, if you've got more other rhythms going on behind, especially if it's a 4/4, like if you've got more syncopated rhythms going on, the slower the tune is, the more groove you are essentially able to have in the tune. And what works when you get faster and faster is basically you just have one space, so you have like a hi-hat in between the kicks.
Yeah.
So if you think of like I Remember, for example, well, that's actually an amazing example of a tune that, I mean, what came out probably 20 years ago or something, maybe 15 years ago or something. And it was like, it still sounds like it could have come out. It still sounds like it could come out tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that tune is pretty fast. I mean, that tune's like 130 or something, 128. And so for the time, that was really fast. And maybe that's partly why it sounds so fresh now. But it's actually got an amazing groove, but it just has the kind of dum, 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 yeah, from the synth. And then it has just straight offbeat hat. And it just kind of, everything's obviously really sidechained to the kick. And, but there's no, the groove is great because it's not trying to have all of this other syncopated stuff. Whereas I quite like, you know, if you think about stuff like all the kind music stuff where you've got much more going on in the grooves behind it, generally you have to slow it down because you just can't fit it in the gaps.
Yeah, that's it. There's a space when you're writing 140 BPM. There's zero space for for anything else, realistically.
Yeah.
Even on a melodic side of things, is like,
exactly.
You listen to trance, and why trance kind of, you have the big breakdowns and everything like that, but then it just goes straight back into straightness because it's like you can't really put like a piano, like a beautiful piano, over a 140 BPM. It just doesn't work. It doesn't sound right. And I think, yeah, like what you said with the kind of music guys, what they're doing is, it's very like soul. It's just got soul.
Yeah.
But again, in argument against that, like if you listen to like a DJ Bones record or a Ben Sims record,
yeah,
or even like Rodhad, right? Some of their stuff that's like really fast techno, but it has some weird type of soul in there that if you take the kick drum out, you still have a record and it still sounds really interesting. I think that what the thing that I'm finding with like a lot of the electronic music now is like, because it's just purely based on that one big kick drum and like a melody hook, there's nothing else kind of layering underneath it. So you take the kick drum out and you don't have that soul. You don't have that, like, but I think maybe that's also because people aren't on drum machines. They're just, it's a lot of it's just software based.
Yeah.
Which I know you work a lot on hardware, and like working with you in the studio the other day is like, it kind of opened things up to me as well, because I use hardware, but not to the extent of what you do. And it was, it was extremely like just creative.
Yeah. It's fun. it's like, once you get past the initial barrier of like, personally, I find there's nothing more dry than just kind of like being in a place with a laptop, a MIDI keyboard, and then just thinking, let's do it, because I have no kind of a prejudice towards software at all. I use software all the time, and it's not that I find, it's not that I think that my analog synth actually even sound better than software. No. It's just purely about the process for me.
Yeah.
So I can't sit there with a mouse and just fiddle around with things on the preset, because I just find it's just so, I just never really get into it. It's just, it's like a barrier emotionally for me. Whereas I'm there in front of a physical thing and I can kind of play around, it just takes me to different places. And actually quite often with what you're left with afterwards is an easier reality. So the same thing with, I'm really into photography, and again, film photography, yes, it definitely can look better and I love the way it looks, but a lot of it's to do with the process, because when I load up my film camera with like 36 mil, for example, you've got 36 shots.
Yeah.
And so I'm taking care about the shots I'm taking. When I've got my digital camera, I just blast off 100 shots of the same one.
Yeah.
And then I've got to look through them. I never even bother because it's just so long. And if you take the time to like take a few takes, say on a drum machine, then afterwards I find the editing is actually a little bit more simple. Mm. And you naturally end up with just different variations. And it's because it is limiting, again, it's limiting using outboard stuff in different ways. You don't have the infinite opportunities to constantly go back and change what you did or change all the automation and everything. So I find that you just sometimes I do some take on a module or a drum machine. I have no idea how I would ever get that sound back.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, this is what I have to use. I've got to cut this up in some way, but I can't redo it. So then it's quite, and you end up with like different things that you maybe wouldn't have allowed to survive if you'd done it just purely on software.
No, but I think it's right, because I think if we look back to like some of the oldest club records, right, that kind of started the scene, they were all limited to like 8 channels.
Yeah.
And you can hear it. Like for me, like Mr. G, he's like still one of the best for me. And I don't know, because I don't know him, but I'm pretty sure all of his stuff is done on hardware, and you can hear it in his music. You can hear him bringing the fader up. You can hear him like muting vocals out. And then at the end of the record, you hear the fade out. It's not like a stop. It's like brings everything down, and you can just, it's kind of like super old school. But I think that's where with limitations, it's where you kind of do get the best music, because you don't have, like you said, you don't have the option to just keep changing. It's just like, I'm stuck with what I've got, and I've got to make it great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. And you can hear like on some of those old records, like, you know, like early Square Pusher stuff, where he's like cutting up arm end breaks. It's just like, I mean, the length he must have gone through to do that. That's a commitment in itself. But I quite enjoy that. There's different, I mean, people used to make music on, you know, trackers as well.
Yeah.
And that stuff's like, it's just a different way of thinking about music. So you can obviously achieve different things. But I mean, like some of the old like outboard stuff, you just hear like some weird style reverb that's just coming in on certain bits. But I don't know, I'm quite obsessed with all that stuff.
No, I love
it. I mean, I still go into the DAW, and I do stuff just completely in the box quite often, but it's just the fact of like, especially if you're, when you're collaborating, that's the other big one, like when you're with other people, just having, when you're jamming around a campfire back in the day, you wouldn't be, and you had like a guitar and like a djembe, whatever, you're just jamming like when we were like teenagers or whatever, like I wouldn't just see one all gathered around one laptop and one trackpad being like, okay, cool, I want my guitar part to sound like this. It's like, no, this is the electronic equivalent. It's like, you jump on that thing, I jump on this thing, you should knock something up on that. It's jamming, it's fun.
Totally, man, totally. What's the plan with, or the transition? Because I know you're still doing band stuff and you're still releasing albums, but how do you tell the story of Dot Major as the DJ and producer, because you're releasing records under yourself as well. How do you kind of tell that story to fans and create new fans and kind of step into a different world?
I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. So I do think live will be a big thing, because that's how I can really express this version of, essentially it's like a version of the culture of electronic music that I see. So I've got a show at Fabric on the 3rd of November. and that'll be like my first sort of proper show really since for a little while. And yeah, that's a big one. I mean, I think I said this to you before, but there's obviously a lot of electronic artists that are really obsessed with doing a live, fully live version of electronic music. And to me, that kind of slightly belies the purpose of electronic music in the first place. So I want to bring a few things in, but it will still fundamentally exist around a club setup like CDJs and a mixer. And then other than that, it's like how it, you know, visually how it looks. I mean, even just the photos I've been doing so far from my project, I think it sounds really funny, but I remember talking to my girlfriend, Mia, who took the photos while we were working on them. She was like, you're always just holding some like little Game Boy like style type synth thing or something. Like, she's like, even when you're not even, she's like, you're standing there, you're holding this like little, whatever, all these dumb little like boxes that I love using. And so we just kind of introduced that into the visual world, where it's like, it's actually like, it's a little bit like fashion focused, but it's kind of, there's always like that synth influence. And I'm very obsessed with color palette and stuff. So I've kind of brought some of that in. And I think, yeah, in terms of the music release, it will be, there'll definitely be a real journey. I mean, I've become quite conscious even very early on of the fact that going into the club world is like, I want it to be quite focused. So I think for the next little while, like the next few releases will be, which there'll be a lot more coming faster. There's been a bit of a pause, but I want it to stay quite club focused for a while.
Yeah.
So I think to make very clear about like what I'm trying to achieve.
Well, I think it's also, you don't want to alienate both brands, and I don't kind of mean to call you both as a brand, but like the London Grammar stuff and the Dot Major stuff, it's I think there can sometimes some people try and do both and it just doesn't work because they don't tell the story well enough, and they don't keep the boundaries, and things can kind of spill over vice versa. I think what you're doing is fucking amazing, man. I love the music. I was listening to it more this morning. And how the fuck did you get a remix of Iron Audi?
Oh shit, that was such an old remix. Yeah,
I didn't even notice that you did that.
No, I know, that was from years ago. That was actually the manager of me at the time, Ross Allen, who's like he's like one of the biggest like music nerd like legends ever. He actually was really, really influential on me getting into electronic music in general. But he just had these weird hookups where he'd be like, you should do this one. It was obviously a strange one to do, but I mean, as a classical pianist as well, I thought it'd be really interesting. And I mean, that guy's a monster. Like the kind of, I was looking actually recently, all those old remixes I did, and just like, and Audi just has this mad reach where it's just kind of, it's done really well streaming. Yeah,
dude, Iron Audi's one of my favorite composers. He's just like, I could listen to his music all day. I have like a playlist on my phone of his stuff, and just on a plane when I'm just like relaxing, I just turn it on. It's fucking amazing. It's amazing. So is the plan to release a lot of singles? Is it the plan to release an album? Is it a plan to release a bunch of music, go touring? What's the plan?
I think at the moment it's about, I don't have that much intention of right now of releasing a whole album.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just a different way of being. Obviously, with the band, we make albums, and it's like, it's so special to do that. But it's also like very all encompassing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's just kind of like you're in that. I mean, like we were there this year with the band, and like we spent the first 6 months, we were just so in that, and I wasn't doing anything else. And I think with the solo stuff, it's like I really enjoy the liberation of like working with lots of different people, just like releasing different bits, and I don't think I maybe necessarily have like the full kind of picture of like a consistent body of work that could be an album right now. So I'm really enjoying exploring the singles thing. And obviously the culture of electronic music is so cool that you can you do these, even if it's like EPs and singles, like, yeah. I know a lot of friends of mine who are working on, been working on albums and stuff, and then it's still quite liberating that people can be on record labels with a very historic output, and yet they'll say, oh, it's cool, you can go and release this EP on Shall Not Fade from Bristol or yeah. whatever. That's kind of, and that's really, really interesting to me, and I want to keep that opportunity there.
Yeah, it's definitely a different world to the major record label world.
Yeah.
However, you say that, like, with the band, you were signed to Ministry. Are you still signed to Ministry?
Yeah, we still are, but yeah. And Ministry is now Sony.
Sony, yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting because Ministry is obviously an electronic label.
Mm.
Are you guys the only band on there? I don't really know. I've not really looked at what they...
No, they've had different artists over the years. So they start, I mean, in terms of bands, that's a good question. They've signed a lot of... when we first signed there, they had Wretch 3-2, example, and a girl called Yasmin.
Yeah.
Who are their kind of non-electronic artists. But I think even despite those artists, we were probably still quite a stone's throw from that universe.
Yeah, definitely.
But sorry, not a stone, sorry, whatever, bigger version that is. I think that's what was so alluring for us to work with them, because it felt like despite all their success, it was kind of like they really had something on the line as well. Because yeah. if they'd have gaffed it with us, maybe everyone would have been like, well, you know, they're an electronic label, they can't do that stuff.
Mm.
So that was cool. I love those. When people work on labels you wouldn't really expect.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
I think it is really exciting. And I think there's a level of having kind of like what you said, like they almost need to prove a point because they're not doing something that they're known for. And I think, I think all as label owners, as producers, as engineers, as artists, as all of that, sometimes we just do need to take a step out of the norm and do something slightly different to prove a point that you can just do it. Because I think it can be very, although we spoke about the electronic world being very freeing and everything like that, it's very easy to get put into a box of like, this is what you do, and you're not allowed to step out of that box.
Totally.
Especially as a DJ, especially. You like what you were saying, you have to write club records. If you don't write club records, it's like you don't get booked to DJ. it's kind of strange. Did you ever feel like that in a band though?
No, not really. I mean, we when we were first starting out, it was like we actually had so Dan and Hannah were together before I joined when we were at university, and they were just kind of, we were much more acoustic. So when I first joined, I was playing a djembe, and then Dan and Hannah would play like acoustics, and we were doing the kind of circuit of in London, which was like the Bedford and the Elgin and the Troubadour, all those kind of acoustic venues. And then when we got signed, it was really a case of us figuring out, obviously, what we wanted it to sound like and stuff. And I remember there was a we were with Rollo Armstrong, who was from Faithless, and we were there. And I remember like the three of us just like sitting around a laptop with that song Letter and Dust, which obviously obviously went on to become on the first album, and we were just messing with the sounds of it, and Rollo just sort of said to us like, you guys need to just go and figure it out more yourselves, because and that was actually a really amazing thing for him to say, because I think a lot of producers, when they get young artists, especially a signed young band who haven't really maybe figured out what they're doing yet, and it's like that's obviously to some producer that would be like a gold mine, because they could really impress their or stamp their kind of vision of whatever they wanted it to be on there. But I think with Rollo, someone like that, he's obviously just like, dude, he's doesn't need, then he's smashed it. So he's just like, you guys go and figure it out, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing to have that experience so early on as well. And having like mentors around you that just support whatever you guys want to do. How do you go about even getting signed that young?
Well, we had quite a random thing where we did this session for this thing called One Take TV, which was in London, when we had a song called We Are All Here. It was just like, remember we had that song and then we went out in Nottingham like a week later or a week after it was released. And I remember Dan saying to me like, dude, it's had like 10,000 plays and it was just like, it's kicking off. And then it got heard by a couple of different A&Rs. And then it was really old school, really. I mean, like we weren't really very well known. We also got spotted doing a sound check at the what was then called the Wheelbarrow in Camden, and we started talking to different labels and stuff, and then we just did a kind of really old school showcase. We played a few songs, and then I remember like hand playing If You Wait on piano, and then the Dipesh, just who was our A&R, just they were just like, well, we've got to sign these guys, like, and it was really old school. No one knew who we were. Like, it wasn't, you know, now I think you have to have a lot more traction obviously going in, which I do remember being the sentiment at the time, because I remember being in bands when I was 15, 16, 17 and us thinking, and everyone saying, you need to get all your own people down to the shows, yeah. And, you know, asking your mates to pay five of us ticket for some promoter who's just going to pocket the whole lot. I mean, it was grim, but I think that now it's just the difference is maybe the type of attention you have to.
Yeah, I am still here.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, maybe like it's the way you have to garner the attention or whatever. I mean, there's artists I've worked with who are really young artists in terms of me, like with writing, producing them. And they go and they've had a sound, a couple I've been working with, and then they go and they have to just do loads of stuff on TikTok. It's like doing covers and all this stuff. And I think sometimes they can get lost in what they actually want to make or what they want to achieve or what their sound was.
Yeah, it's really just interesting how it is now compared to what it is. But you're right, it was still exactly the same. You still had to have some sort of traction. You still had to have some sort of talent. I think the difference is now it's just how that talent is how it's kind of presented to the world. It's TikTok. But again, I think the longevity of artists is not there so much nowadays, where you're basically signed on one record and then you can get dropped very easily. And if the second record doesn't do well, and it's way more single based.
I think it's pretty crazy though. You can get signed for like £1 million for one track that is like 30 seconds long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny that you think the record labels and then you think like, oh, they're so dingy with their money these days, but they're putting down like millies on people that is just like tiny, tiny, tiny clip of music, and they don't even know who these people are or if they're any good or.
Well, there's no foundation, is there? It's purely based on one record going viral.
Yeah,
and really, the labels aren't fussed about building artists. They're a record label. What does a record label want? A record label wants records, and they want hit records.
Yeah,
and if a record's doing well on TikTok or on social media, it's like, well, we can make a fuck ton of money out of this very quickly. Don't care about who the artist is. We don't care about their second record. It's like countless in the last like 3 years, especially since COVID, like how many artists have had like massive records and then their second record comes out and it's utter bullshit. And I don't mean that in a way where it's a shit record. No. It's just the label don't care about it because it didn't have the hype of what the original one did, and so they just leave it on.
It's quite terrifying, really. I mean, like for example, like someone like you, if you just had, say your next record just goes like fucking N-bill streams and you're like it's on every single social media everywhere, it's like part of you probably like terrified that you've just kind of hit the bell at the top of the thing and you're like, the game's over.
Game over. But like, in this,
it's just like, how, it's almost like, how do you survive having that much success?
Literally. And it's one thing that I've said over the years, and I think anybody on the podcast that's listened is bored of me saying it, but like, I'm glad at this moment in time, I haven't had a hit record. Like I haven't, and I know we spoke about it with like the band. Mm. What you were saying is like, what you were saying with the band is like, you guys aren't number one record. It's like single band. You're a number one album band, which kind of is more of a cohesive kind of thing where you're not relying on those singles to do well, but the album does well because you've got real fans. And I think for me, it's like, if I would definitely take a hit record now, if I'm honest. I'd fucking love it.
We all would. That's the thing, obviously. Like, it's like, you can't say that. You're like, oh, you know, the poison chalice. But when that's offered to you, you're like, hell yeah, I want it. Give it to me now.
But like, what I do say is I'm glad I haven't had one up until now. Because if I didn't build the foundation of what I have of a career now, and I had a hit record, I wouldn't have what I have now. It wouldn't have carried on, because people just want that hit record. Classic example in the electronic world, like look at Fisher, right? Like a lot of people don't realize how many years he was another artist. He was Cutsnake for years. And then he went off and did his own thing. And then it blew the fuck up and it is where it is today. I literally just had Hannah Leng on the podcast as well. It's a similar situation for her. A lot of people don't realize she's been doing it for 10 years, been throwing parties in Scotland for 10 years, like doing, like building foundations. And then, the last 12 months blown up, and now it's fucking insane what she's doing. It's insane. Mm-hmm. She was like, today she just released, she's doing like three parties. One of them's in Scotland, I think in Glasgow or Dundee. It's 200 cap venue, 8,000 signups.
Wow, it's crazy.
And you're just like, it's just the power of having a big record, but also having foundation. And I think that's the difference, is like, how do you grow that foundation as an artist before having the hit record? It's so important. And I say it over
that's very true. It's like, the longer you can go without it, the better, in a sense.
Yeah.
And also, it's a bit like, it's the same in any career, really. Once you have that level of success, it's like suddenly your entire disposition changes, because like when you look at boxers, like there's no surprise that the amount of boxers that win the world championship belt and then they go off the rails and then they're like suicidal and depressed, because their entire life has just been, what do you want to achieve? I'm going to be champion of the world. All boxers say, I'm going to be champion of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you get there, it's like, well, what is your purpose now? Yeah. So I think that's why you have to find, and being in a career for a long time with music is a good one. Like, it takes you a long time to realize that your purpose and your enjoyment is the process.
Yeah.
That's how I feel right now in the studio. It's just like, my enjoyment is in the process. I mean, whatever comes out could come out. I get a sense of achievement of like having completed something. And other than that, it's like my enjoyment is just being there, showing up. Like, that's it.
Where did you find that from?
I don't really know. I think it's like having, especially with what has happened for us, like it's just, there's always a new thing. Like, we're playing this venue, doing this thing, where like we've got the number one, maybe we'll get an award or something. But it's kind of like, there's always, going through your 20s and experiencing that upward curve, it creates like a hunger to kind of
do more,
maybe get that, those things. And then you start to, it twists your sense of like, what, I guess, of what's important. I know personally, I can't speak for the other guys, but I think like that's a big part of growing up. I think when you're in your 30s, you do just naturally look at life slightly differently. Mm. And I think that's maybe a lot of why people when they look back at their life, they actually think of their 30s as like their favorite decade, because it's not necessarily about like having a bit of money or a bit of success or anything else. I think it's more like just the ability to just not worry as much about the way you are or whatever, because it's just kind of it is what it is. And then it's been, and then you have a family, and it's just like, well, I'm not even the most important person in my own life anymore. So
yeah, no, you're right. it does take time. For me, it's like been a process of like, what is the point? What is this whole thing for? What's the bigger picture? And like, where, like, you can, I don't know about you, but like, I can be in a situation where I'm so busy doing everything, but then it's also question, like, I then sit back and question, it's like, what am I doing all of this for? Like, what is the, is there a bigger picture, or is it just the fact that I just fucking love it? Like, I don't know. And it doesn't, there doesn't always have to be that like bigger goal or always growth, but it's, I think in this day and age now, it's very hard, especially with your peers around you, and trying not to compare yourself and trying not to be, why are they doing that and why am I not doing that? If you know what I mean, it's very easy to do that, but it's also very hard to like not do that. How do you,
it's hard to ignore it.
Yeah. How do you kind of get through that, as, especially as like on the band aspect, but also in like the new electronic world that you're kind of working into and getting into, like how do you get through that?
That's tough. I mean, even with friends and stuff, it's like, I've got, like, say I've got like some club music, and then I've got songs like where I'm singing and playing piano, and I haven't released any of that stuff. And maybe I've played a cross section of stuff to people, and then certain people will just be like, oh, that's great. And it's like, that's not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But ultimately it's just like, I know everyone says like you should try and not really care whatever. And of course everyone cares about what other people think. I'm not saying I don't care what other people think, but also what's more important to me is just like, I'm happy. I'm working hard, I'm enjoying my life, like, and I'm being involved in things that I'm proud of, whether it be the band or whether it be my own stuff. And it's just ultimately it's my journey, and I'm running with it. I mean, I remember when you said that to me about what you were doing, you're like, what am I, you know, with club music, because obviously like looking at making some music, it's just like maybe slightly less folk, club focus or whatever, and it's just like, actually it's just like you work so hard, and just like what when I see you, it's just like every week, and you're out, you're doing like podcasts, like every week you got all this mad stuff going on, you're in the studio all the time, you're like very, very like global in what you want to achieve. And then it's just funny, you're kind of like, what am I doing? Like, how could you say that? Like, from the outside, it's just like you know, you're such like a go-getter. And it's just kind of, that's the nature of someone like you anyway.
I think that's the thing though, isn't it? It is a battle, especially when, like what you said earlier, being self-employed, is like there's nobody else to do anything for you. Like, you have to do it. You have to do it all. And well, you don't have to, but like, if you want success in this, you do, and you have to keep working. But is there a level of excitement for you where you're doing something new? Because I love it when something new happens. I love being able to do something new.
There is. And I think that extends across everything. So it's like, I think, because we're all, I mean, like for me personally, obviously I'm doing all this different stuff. And then as a band as well, we're all doing different things. And I think all of that feeds into an excitement within the band when we're together as well.
Mm.
There's just a freshness to everything. I'm really enjoying like everything at the moment. And it's been great. Like, I feel quite blessed to just be doing what I'm doing, and I'm really excited to, I haven't really even got started on the DJ thing yet, which is like, I love so much. And I think, like we discussed earlier, like partially, you know, I've really been very conscious of not releasing stuff that's like too pigeonholable at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think a natural byproduct of that is that the bookings are a bit slower than they could have been if I'd have just gone for the jugular, maybe more from the start.
Totally.
But actually, like, it's really important to me to maintain that autonomy and not get sucked into one of these kind of black holes of like of sound that exists.
Don't do it, man. So, don't do it. I think it's just keeping everybody on their toes, isn't it? And I think that's what you can, you, I think also as an outsider, and obviously like we know each other, but not like amazingly well. We spent a couple of days together.
Yeah.
But I think that is the one thing that I kind of get from you, is that you are like the true artist of artists. And I think you're in a situation, this is only my feelings, and I could be wrong, but like, you're in a situation where you have the band that does the band, right? And it does it in the best possible way. Now you're doing electronic as well. You have the freedom to do what the fuck you want. and not have to be pigeonholed and not have to do those things. And I think that's like, if I get excited for you, mate, if I'm honest, because it's just like an amazing situation to be in where it doesn't matter how well a record does.
Yeah, I think like I'm kind of, it's interesting actually, the next one I'm going to put out is a bit more kind of
where you want to be.
No, it was I remember like I put out this what like a club tour over months ago, and actually this is the one that all the DJs picked out, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And again, like I said, I'm not shying away from that either. Yeah. It was just a natural thing to like, I've got a lot of rhythm. I mean, just played you some stuff that are naturally used to the dance floor. And then I've also got others that maybe it's a case of like, I go and do a bit more of like a kind of underground, like head EP and put it on vinyl with one of the other labels that I love, like from Bristol or something.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Yeah.
Let's do it, man. Do it all. Mate, let's wrap this up. We've just done an hour and 10 minutes. Thank you so much for coming on, man. How can people get involved with you as an artist? How can people follow you? How can people tell me all of that shit?
Yeah, so I'm just on all of the usual socials, @Dot Major, and find me on Spotify and everything. There'll be a lot more music coming out soon, and there'll be more exciting news from the band as well. Of course, Underground. But yeah, man, it's been a pleasure. Like, we'll get back in the studio soon for sure.
Let's do it, man.
People need to hear our heater as well.
I know. We need to put that out. I don't know how we're gonna do that. Let's talk about that after. All right, man. All right. Big love. Keep safe. See you soon. Thank you, mate. And that is a big love to Dot for coming on. Thanks to the listening. Please share it with your friends. Please subscribe if you don't. And I will see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.